So we have the AARP tax volunteers come in 2 days a week to help people do their taxes for free. If you come out, if you drive by tomorrow in the morning when we're having story time and taxes, you won't be able to find a parking space. It's pretty awesome. Let's see, do I have anything else? Oh, yes, we are partnering with several of our community. We've had programs in conjunction with the Holiday Arts Council, who's really wonderful, and the Holiday Tree Committee. We're doing Arbor Day Festival things with them and a tree talk series. And we're also working with the Healthy Holiday and a bunch of things like that. So it's really fun. You'll see the art from the local elementary school on the wall. It's a great community to be a part of. And we're glad you can come join us and see the fun we're having.
So I'm on the community council in this community where I live. And tree council.
Yeah.
And so let people know about what's going on at the library and to get information about what families would like. I don't know if they all do that, but I just had to give a shout out.
She's a rock star. And for those of you that don't realize it, this building was remodeled. It was built in the 60s or 70s, I guess, originally. And it had a smaller footprint. We enlarged it a little bit, remodeled this meeting room and many other spaces within the Holiday Library. Opened it up, as Drew said, 2 weeks before we closed it for COVID.
That's fun.
Yeah, that was an interesting time. And during that closure that we remodeled it, I think a lot of patrons did drift off to other locations. They went to either Whitmore or up to Mill Creek or other branches. And Trudy's done a great job of re-engaging with the population here and bringing them back in. And we have seen an increase in our circulation on daytime. And as she said, it is an older population, so it's convenient for them to come on either buses or walk or other transit. So it's a great location, community library. We're still one of the smaller ones, even though we did remodel it and enlarge the footprint slightly. It still is one of the smallest branches in the system and one of the only two that have a dual entrance. So all of our other facilities, we have a single entrance point of entry into the space. Having a dual entrance creates challenges both from security, but also junior high school lets out. Kids like to run from one door to the other and out. The doors are open and closed. So we still have some HVAC system challenges, even though we did do an extensive remodel. We continue to have challenges with the building. And I think that's one of the interesting things about deciding to remodel versus replace. Other buildings, Kern Rings and some other locations, we've decided that the building was too far gone to just remodel it, did a facelift. This one, we thought the infrastructure was sound enough that we could give it a facelift. As we got deeper into the structure itself, we realized we had to shore things up. It became more expensive. We had earthquake-proof. A lot of systems that had not been had that reinforcement done. So it's now a safe building, at least. But there are still plenty of challenges with it. And we're looking at replacing other buildings within the system as we critically think about whether it's appropriate to remodel a facility or replace a facility. We have to make those and cost-benefit analysis, and we think this remodel will provide us another decade or 15 years of service, but we know that eventually we'll have to replace this location as well into the future.
We appreciated that earthquake shoring in March
2020. Yes.
We have a couple of other buildings that we're looking at that may not have that same sturdiness, but we're trying to address those as we can.
We'll go ahead now. The first action item is to approve the minutes from the previous one. I wasn't here for that one, so.
I'll move to approve the minutes from February 25th.
I'll second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Beth, thank you.
Is that Suzanne who?
Yeah, hi there.
Ben. We can't see you, but you can see us, hopefully.
Yes. Thank you so much for having a virtual option. I appreciate it today.
Great.
Now for any public comments?
No members of the public?
Okay.
Okay, there we go.
That's an easy one. And is there any correspondence?
None to Mike Gurry's attention at this time.
In that case, we'll go ahead and move to the new business items of the agenda. And
The first one is for Chelsea. Hi, Chelsea. I see that your name is up there. I don't see your...
Hi. Yeah, sorry, I'm at work.
We totally understand. We're glad that we can provide a virtual option for you. And this is your last board meeting. Chelsea has been a member, a stalwart of this board for two terms, plus a few extra months that we tacked on there as we continue to search for replacement board members. She's done a fabulous job. She had a deep connection to libraries prior to joining the board and had a lot of experience and provided this board with a wealth of advice and knowledge and support. And Chelsea, I want to thank you for the service that you have provided to the citizens of Salt Lake County and to our staff, supporting us in a lot of different ways. And it's been a pleasure to serve with you and look forward to your future endeavors.
Thank you. I have enjoyed this so much, and it feels like I've been on the board forever, but I kind of can't believe it's over now. But everyone, the new members will do great, and I'll continue to post and share all the library activities. I'm a library evangelist.
Great. Thank you so much again, Chelsea.
Thanks.
Look forward to seeing you at the Granite Library.
All right.
Now we have the welcome for our new nominee.
I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and I think we can go around and maybe introduce some staff members. But first of all, let's have Spencer. You want to say a few words? And
sure. My name is Spencer Romney. Salt Lake City, most recently back from Philadelphia in 2010, and have lived in Philadelphia since. I'm excited to be on the board. I love libraries. I love the mission of the libraries. I'm looking forward to working with all of you.
So Spencer is an attorney, and I think will provide us some great advice in that regard, as well as many other areas. Great. And then Anastasia Morgan.
Okay, I'm so glad to be here. Anastasia McCain from Morgan. I got married, so Morgan. I'm so excited to be here. I'm a longtime lover of libraries and lifelong learner. I moved to Sandy 5 years ago, and I've loved Salt Lake and moved from Chicago, and it's been the best experience. The library's been really fundamental in helping me connect with the community over the last 5 years, and so I'm really excited to be here and see how I can contribute. I'm also a lawyer. We were joking about I just had an apology to, well, I'm not here for you, but I'm glad to be here.
No apology.
Yeah.
I'm Steve Sokol, and I grew up in Taylorsville and then East Mill Creek, and moved away for a while, but I've been living in Harriman for 18 years. I'm an active library user, and I dare say I say evangelist as well. I know I'm a top fan on Facebook and Instagram. I'm visiting the Library of Congress next month. I'm kind of obsessed with books. I'm
a library nerd.
I'm a library nerd. My grandpa was a library nerd. My dad was a library nerd, and I am too. My uncle Steve was Steve Pearson was a branch manager at this branch at one point. My aunt Lily Pearson still works at Whitmore. I'm not an attorney, I'm an internal auditor. So
a whole different skill set.
I'm a real believer in internal auditing and compliance as a cooperative, continuous improvement activity. And so I'm a very positive internal auditor.
Great.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Let's go around the room to introduce who else we have here. Melissa, you want to start? You have received a few emails from Melissa.
I have, and I've met Steve and Spencer, but I haven't had a chance to meet you, so sorry about that. So I'm Melissa Haslam. I am also new as chief of position. I've only been in this job for 6 months, maybe, since August. I'm also new. I'm still learning a lot of things. But I'm
the
annoying person to get emails
from,
so enjoy.
So Melissa is the liaison for the board and will be the one that you interact with mostly for any correspondence and things.
So what is just been with the library for a while. So I've been with the library like maybe 11-ish years, but new to this position. I've been the library for that.
I'm Bill Scarper. I'm the current board chair. So they let me out, and hopefully that's no, I'm also an attorney and as a compliance officer and been here for a little bit over. So.
They'll ask a lot of good questions and probes into areas that need probing and very appropriately, so we appreciate the input and all of the things that you provide. So.
I'm Holly, and I'm an educator by training, and I love libraries. I grew up on the west side, and the libraries are really nice for me to see the possibilities that are available to me.
I'm Sandra Osborne. I work in operations support. I've been with the board for...
Your second term.
This is my yes! I mean, my second term now. So, the very funny.
I'm Kati Tar. I'm a clinical social worker, and I'm fairly new to the board. I think I've been here about a year and a half. Love being here. I also live in Sandy, so and I work in Palmwood Heights, so I'm sandwiched between Sandy and Whitmore. I love both my libraries.
Megan Smith, I'm with District Attorney's Office, and I'm in the Civil Division. I'm the attorney assigned to help Jim and the library with their legal questions. And yeah, I've been on and off again, helping out with the library for probably about 16 years.
Yeah, all those thorny issues we throw at Megan. And sometimes we take her advice.
Sometimes, mostly.
Joey, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, hi. My apologies for being a few minutes late. I'm here representing the Community Services Department, which is kind of the umbrella county agency that works with libraries, arts and culture, parks and rec, and the planetarium. I guess I got all four. You don't know what that's trying to say. I'm here representing our department. Usually Robin Shell-Hoop is here. She's in another meeting. Thanks for indulging my late arrival. Shoot, I tried. I'm coming from another meeting. And it's lovely to be here.
Great. And then online we have Suzanne Harrison. Do you want to say a few words, Suzanne?
Sure. Hi there. My name is Suzanne Harrison. I'm newly elected to the Salt Lake County Council. I'm one of the at-large members, and I'm really excited to serve on the library board. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, Suzanne is our liaison into the county council offices. And so, Suzanne, I believe we were advised that the new board members will be on next Tuesday's agenda for confirmation. Is that, do you have any more information around that?
I didn't see it on the agenda tomorrow. Are you talking about a week from tomorrow?
Correct. Yeah, so we've on this, I believe.
Yeah, I don't have the agenda that far out in advance, but let me know how I can support that effort.
Okay, we'd like to give the new board members an opportunity to either participate by WebEx in person if they're available, but a time certain on an agenda would be helpful, I think, so that they don't have to sit through the entire county council meeting, which can be laborious. And I commend you for doing that.
Yeah.
Volunteer positions, and a couple hours is very precious for them. So.
Oh, absolutely.
4 hour meeting next time.
Will you shoot me an email, and then we can make sure to get a time certain, and we can address that offline and get it on the agenda.
Perfect.
Thank you.
No, but I think we can work at council scheduling on Thursday if we have the information. Grant gets to ask for a time certain, too. So we'll multi-pronged approach, get a time certain if we can.
Great. That will help.
Sounds great, and thanks to the new people for being willing to serve.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you. And Chelsea, we've introduced you, so I think the rest of the WebEx folks are staff members, so we do have Steve Van Muren. Are you on, Steve? Steve is our resident of Sandy. He's a gadfly who attends most board meetings as well as county council meetings, and he often keeps us on the straight and narrow, right, Steve? So he's just a citizen, not a board member, but provides some good input. Resident Sandy. Hi, Steve.
Hi, I'm glad to be here. Sorry I'm not with you. Just couldn't handle it today. Thank you.
You got it. How about some staff members? You want to introduce yourself just to kind of get a face and position? I'm Russ Snow. I'm the physical manager. Suzanne,
I'm Gail. I'm office coordinator.
Suzanne's our helper, and she is here for the last time today. We're all a little sad about it. Trying to ignore that happening.
Suzanne's retired.
So that works for the county is you became retired.
Is there anyone in the working
community? I'm Dolly Rao, and I'm like.
Hello, I'm the Education Program Manager in HR. I'm Pamela Park. I'm the HR Manager and the OWL Specialist.
Thank you. So, Warren, I'm the Senior Manager of Collections. Steve hired me, so thank you. I'm Jennifer Fay, and I'm the Associate Director for Public Services, which is branch operations.
I'm Matt McClain, I'm the Associate Director I work with programs, our fun things, the marketing team, the Meridian Event Center, and we have both libraries in the jail.
Leslie Webster, I'm Associate Director over Finance and Operations. Finance, HR, IT, and Facilities.
I've got it all memorized.
Yeah. Just provide all your comments and questions. No, this is your program at the right.
The good thing is every time agenda, we put their name with it.
Okay.
Now we our next item on the agenda is the professional ethics training.
Yes, and I'm very excited about this. And we have Dolly and Emily to help present on this. It's a learning module that we are rolling out for our staff. They haven't really participated in this yet, but I wanted to preview it for you and also provide you some of the foundation of library professional ethics. It's important for us, I think, to continue to remember why we do what we do and how important personal privacy is, intellectual freedom, and some of the other tenets of librarianship. It's one of the things that is taught in school, in library school. However, I don't know if they've been emphasizing it as much as we would like, and it's certainly not available to all of the staff. And so not everyone in the library is a librarian. And so it's important for our clerical staff, our shelvers, really all of our employees to be imbued with the concept of professional ethics. And so, Dolly, I'll turn it over to you.
That was perfect. Introduction, you got me to my second bullet point. But yeah, I just want to reinforce that we designed this training to help all library workers from the custodian all the way to our directors to think about how ethics are embedded in all the tasks that they do and how we're all kind of on the same page doing the same things even though our individual contributions may look very different. So the other point that Jim also kind of underscored was just that we want to inculcate a sense of teamwork. We want to make sure that everyone realizes that their contributions are equal in terms of creating an environment in our institution that invites the public in and makes them feel like no matter where they go, they're going to get the same positive treatment, they're going to be treated with respect, and so forth. So let's go to, yeah. Okay. So the training does have some really basic things in it, like what are ethics? And we came up with this definition of they're guideposts for human behavior. And, of course,
all workplaces have some sort of ethics or regulations or guidelines. There are some that people hear all the time, attorney-client privilege or doctor-patient privilege, privacy, things like that. But libraries also have ethics, and I've always called them library values. So I'm having to work on my vocabulary to make sure that I use all the right words. Core values, sometimes you'll hear. But yeah, library values. It's just a thing that I've been working in libraries for 30 years, and from day one, library values are something that drew me into this institution. As a child, libraries were really, really important to me. They were a safe place when I wasn't safe. And so I think I already started learning that sense of library values even when I was just a patron as a child. Okay, so we are now to the next one. Okay, so what if everybody did it is a really great way to think about what is an ethic. And this phrase comes from my father. My father was a very philosophical man and was always trying to teach me sort of highfalutin concepts. And when I was about 4 years old, we lived on a corner, and my dad was a gardener, and he had a beautiful yard, and we had flower beds and trees and all sorts of beautiful things, and it drove him bananas that the kids would cut across his flower beds and his beautifully landscaped yard. And one day, he just pointed the damage out to me and said, you know, before you do anything, you should always ask yourself, what if everybody did it? Well, apparently I was an incredibly impressionable four-year-old because I still can't cut across a lawn without thinking about that. And that phrase has really stuck with me my whole life. And I use it in my personal life, and I use it very much in my professional life. So it made me sort of happy to insert this thought in this training, because if my dad was alive now, he'd be over 100 years old. And I love the idea that his spirit is still with us and he is still teaching people about ethics. So that's where "what if everybody did it" came from. Okay, so we already kind of mentioned that different professions have different types of ethics and regulations. And so we, again, remind our library staff that every workplace has standards. Our workplace has standards, too. This is something that we won't go over in detail, but of course, if you're working in a library, you need to be aware of the American Library Association and all of the wonderful documents that they provide for us that give us an underpinning to what we do. So there is something called the American Library Association Library Bill of Rights, and that is really our foremost professional guiding document. In the training, there will be links so people can read through that if they're not familiar with it or if they want to refresh their memories. So next. And then, of course, this organization itself has its own guided documents, which include our mission statement, which is to make a positive difference in the lives of our community by inspiring imagination, satisfying curiosity, and providing a great place for everyone to visit. We also have a lot of other guiding documents. We have policies, procedures. Many of these things are things that I know that you as the board deal with and have to approve and so forth. And we also have a lot of electronic manuals that help us when we come up with a scenario and think, oh, I haven't dealt with this for a while. It's really great to have those guiding documents to go in and make sure that we do, that each library does things the same way so that the patrons have a consistent experience, which I would hope helps them to trust us, that it really builds our trust between patrons and the library. So, what are some of our general ethical principles? Well, there we have compassion and respect for our patrons and also for our fellow staff, that we use professional ethics to guide our individual judgment in diverse situations, and that we take pride in our work at the library because the library is a vital institution in our community. And I would also like to say, for our democracy, It's a place where people can practice democracy. So, library values. Our professional ethics are core values. There are three basic categories: privacy and confidentiality, equal access and service, and intellectual freedom. And again, as I've said before, I refer to these as library values. So we go back to a basic guideline is, what if everybody did it? So then we have some examples of things that might come up on a daily basis in the library that are more general, and to sort of ask our staff as they're going through this training to think about, how would I respond in this situation? Let's go to the next one.
Those are great examples. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I assume we're going to make this available for everyone so that you can read through each thing carefully. I just didn't want to, you know, read every slide in full today. Okay. So then the training goes through each section in detail. So we'll start with privacy and confidentiality. So when a visitor enters the Salt Lake County Library, they are granted the expectation that what they read, watch, or listen to will not be recorded, commented on, or shared. Privacy is essential to the exercise of free speech, free thought, and free association, and all people possess a right to privacy and confidentiality in their library use, whether they are children or adults, or whether they're library card holders or just visitors. So I summarize this with, if patrons fear that their library use is not private and confidential, their freedom has been compromised. So freedom kind of underpins all of these concepts. And again, I would like to reiterate that democracy is part of this, that in order to come to consensus in a democracy, people have to have access to all points of view, to all different kinds of materials, and they need to be able to look at those things freely without people following them around, judging them, and so forth. So those are concepts that I just kind of always keep trying to insert in. So again, we have places where both patrons and staff can look for our policies on privacy and confidentiality. And there are laws, of course, that help us determine what is confidential. And so we have things like personally identifiable information, questions that people have asked us, the materials that they borrow, what they're searching for online or in our catalog, incidents and complaints, you know, even those things. People should be able to freely challenge us as well. I mean, that's part of this. And so they need to feel the ability that we will, that they can make their complaint and that we will take it seriously, and we will also not broadcast to everyone that, that's the person who, you know, asked the question. It's really, really important that people feel comfortable having difficult conversations as well as just having fun in the library. And again, it's the law. We have our lawyer here that I think has reviewed all of this. So there are a variety of laws that do affect our records, government record access management, and things like security camera footage. We have to be very cautious. People can't just come in and say, hey, you know, something happened and I want to see your footage. So court orders, things like that, they do come into play in the library. Next. It's important for staff to understand that this privacy and confidentiality applies not just to patrons, but it applies to staff as well, that we have boundaries, and we have to respect boundaries between us and patrons and between each other. And by practicing that with each other, it helps us to do that with our patrons. One of the things that's sometimes really hard when you work in a library, because we tend to be a compassionate bunch and we like people, and so a lot of times we're talking to people who we're the only, you know, personal conversation they're probably going to have that day. And people, yeah, just like that. And people, they want to know about us. They want to ask questions about our families and a variety of things. And we have to learn to be very gentle in redirecting them so that we're not sitting there spilling all kinds of personal information on a public service desk. And it's not because we want to be rude or, you know, curt with people, but it's because we're practicing that value. And so we, in the training, I hope that there will be a moment for people to practice phrases and things like that they can say to redirect someone about, oh, well, tell me about, you know, what you're reading, or tell me about why you're here today, so that we can protect our own privacy. And of course, I'm sure, we live in a world with all sorts of things that happen, and staff also have to watch out for one another, because sometimes someone is pursuing someone for other reasons. And so, you know, it's important for us to remember that we don't just give out people's schedules. We don't just say where they're working today or that sort of thing. That we have to learn to say, oh, I can get that message to them. Thank you. Give me your information. I'll pass that on. And it just, all of these practices should be built on that sense of, building a really strong foundation of ethics. Next. So in the training, each section will have examples that people can click through and think about. So we won't read all the examples, but there are common scenarios that might happen, and we tried to choose scenarios that would reflect a variety of different people, because it's easy to imagine you're working on a public service desk, you're dealing with the public. I think it's easy for people to imagine the ethical boundaries. But what about the tech guys who come out? What about Krista's staff who are helping to put all the materials together. And I said guys, didn't I? So we don't have a lot of guys at this point. We have gals as well, but I just say guys. Anyway, so the second example was, an IT example of why do they set our computers up so that after each session, things get sort of washed away. Well, that's a way to protect people's privacy and confidentiality so that they feel safe when they are doing their searches for maybe a medical problem that they're having or domestic violence that someone is experiencing in their life. It's really important that people feel safe, that they can find the information they need without worrying that their next-door neighbor or the next person who sits down or whatever is going to know what they were looking for. And we already sort of talked about the personal stuff with the staff, but it's very important to remember to protect one another as professionals. So I already kind of went through this with how to redirect and how to be professional and neutral but helpful. And a lot of moments where we have to perform ethical values sometimes seem odd to people. Like when someone says, oh, I forgot my library card, you can just, let me just blurt it out to you or something like that. And that seems really like, oh, well, sure, of course, right? Wouldn't we do that? Of course. Well, no, we wouldn't do that. Because, yes, I know it probably seems unlikely that they're going to blurt out someone's card that they've stolen or whatever, but we still have to make sure that people realize that we do take it very seriously. Your library card is like a credit card, is sometimes what I say to people, and you wouldn't just be running around blurting out your credit card number on the bus or whatever, which is kind of like what the library is. We're a public space. Anyone can hear that. I'll tell you a really quick funny story. One day recently, there was a gentleman speaking relatively loudly on his phone, and I was about to address it when he started, blurting out things about his bank account and also saying things like, well, there should be $5 million in there. And he's also, saying this number, things like that. And I'm thinking, wow, okay, how do I sort of let him know that's probably not a very safe practice, But again, so we have to find ways to, when people get sort of like, well, what do you mean you can't just look me up without my ID or whatever? You know who I am, right? You walked in and I'd be like, yes, I remember you from the board meeting. Oh, you don't have your library card and you don't have an identification? I'm really sorry. But we do that because it is important to remind people that we are professionals and we take it very seriously what we're doing. All right, our next value is equal access and service. Pretty simple to understand. All people are welcome, all are treated equally, and there should be no barriers to service. We are not here to judge people's worthiness of service, nor the correctness of their points of view. We are here to provide equal access to materials and services, and this is the essence of our professional behavior. And I love this little, sorry, Emily, I do love this, and I don't know where you found that, but I love it. Diversity is a fact, equity is a choice, inclusion is an action, and belonging is an outcome. I just thought that beautifully illustrated what I was trying to say. So, we don't block access to materials based on any form of identity, whether it's someone's age or their point of view, where they come from, their abilities. We also try very hard not to create socioeconomic barriers to services, and we try not to privilege any viewpoint beyond the viewpoint that all are welcome and people should have free access and choices. We want to make sure everyone feels welcome in the building and that everyone is reflected in our staff, in our materials, in our displays, and in our services. So, again, this is where we, in the training, hope that the staff member taking the training will apply this thought to their particular tasks that they do, that we embed equal access and service into everything that we do, from issuing library cards, creating policies, organizing our space, what our displays look like, how our shelving is designed, and so forth. And again, equal access is not, I give everyone 2.5 minutes. Yeah. That is not how we think about it. We serve every patron in an equitable manner, meaning we help them to solve whatever problem it is that they've come into the library for that day. If it is something as simple as, I need to use your restroom, we point them to the restroom. If they need a lot of help with a resume or something like that, then we're going to give them whatever time that they need. And we try to tell everyone that every staff member impacts the patron experience. So, like, for example, Whitmore, where I work, we have a wonderful custodian, and she works so very hard, and she makes the building beautiful. And I try to tell her that as often as I can, that it really impresses me how diligent she is and how I know that when people walk in that door and the first thing that they see, it's beautiful, it's clean, it's, you know, neat and tidy and all of those things. That's really important in building trust, and just as important as what I do, you know, when someone comes up and asks me a question. Next. So then again, we'll have examples that we hope will bring in. So we have custodians. We have scheduling desks. So, you know, we don't have this attitude of like, oh, I finally made it to you know, the highest level of my job, and now I only have to work 8 to 5, and I never have to see an evening or a weekend or whatever. Well, that's not really very fair to the public if you have that kind of attitude. So as managers, it's important to make sure that every hour that we're open, patrons have access to professional staff. So that's one example of how a manager might think about stuff like that. Marketing. Sarah knows that it's very important that when we're creating publicity that we, you know, pay attention to what types of images that we're using and making sure that it's legible and, you know, and that people whose sight is impaired can see big signs and things like that. All of those decisions involve ethics. And then, of course, facilities are so important to us because they help make sure that everything is ADA accessible. They make sure that, you know, there's not snow on the ground that's going to keep people from coming into the library and so forth. So everybody is involved in these activities to make our institution strong. This was something that one of my colleagues that I ran this training by brought up to me, because, you know, we always say to people, you treat others the way you want to be treated. And she said, well, I know a better sentence. And she said, it's called the Platinum Rule, treat others the way they wish to be treated. And that is a really interesting thing that you can have a long discussion about. But again, I think it is really a great way of summarizing that idea of some people walk in the library, they don't want to come ask us a question. It is important to them to feel competent or self-directed or whatever that is about their personality. And they will think more highly of us if we do have good signage, if things are clear, if they understand what they're supposed to do. So that's a patron that we have to think about, as well as the patron who we want them to come to the welcoming desk, and we want to make sure we're smiling and our demeanor is good. I mean, there's all different kinds of people. So this is a question that helps us to ask ourselves, who are we not thinking of? Who is the less obvious person to think of, but they also need to be treated the way they expect to be treated? And finally, the most important ethic probably that underscores all libraries of any kind is intellectual freedom. And again, we have all kinds of policies that have to do with how we select our materials, how we create displays, and also what to do when people challenge the materials in the library. This year, we will be working on a display training that will be, I think, similar to something like this. So we're going to make it even a stronger statement about making sure that we're clear that our core values are always being honored. So programming, collections, displays should all reflect the core values. We do not censor materials, and we allow patrons to make their own choices about materials, and that includes children. So why do most people come to the library? We already heard a few folks today saying how much they love our stuff, you know? So the resources, the DVDs, the books, the magazines, everything. And it's important that we provide all points of view. I already said this earlier. That is the essence of intellectual freedom. And again, I believe it's the essence of democracy, is making sure that everyone has access to all points of view so that they can learn to evaluate information. I wrote myself a note. I just remembered. Let's see. To come to consensus. So I believe that intellectual freedom is the underpinning of democratic society. To come to consensus, all points of view must be analyzed and evaluated, and people must learn how to determine fact from fiction and lived experience from ideals. Well-informed citizens and residents are the key to building a successful society. So that's where it comes back to being proud of working for this type of organization that helps build community and builds a democratic future. So again, these are, we could just beat this forth to death, because this is something that librarians all value very strongly, is that people should have no judgment, all access. Next. And I already just said something about well-informed residents is something that we are trying to help people do. Our information should be accurate when factual and well-reviewed and current. So we have policies that help us choose materials. I mean, obviously, we don't just go onto Amazon and choose whatever sounds good. You know, we have all sorts of policies and procedures for reviewing materials to make sure that they meet standards for our community. And once we have those things in our library, then it's our job to promote them and to make sure that everyone knows that all points of view are to be found in the library. So our examples are programming and displays. More displays. Because displays, that is a really, when a librarian is making a display, a lot of times we're doing something, we're inspired, we're like, oh, I love this TV show, and I know lots of people love this TV show, and I just want to put all the books that are connected to this. And sometimes it's really easy to forget that in our displays, there might be people who don't like that TV show, or want to read, like, you know, or for Valentine's Day, you don't want to just walk into a romance-filled building. they might want some like anti-romance stuff. It's really important to always kind of remember that just because you love something doesn't mean everyone's going to love it, and it's important to make sure that everybody feels welcome and that they will find something on display that they will be interested in as well. And then we also have the example of what happens when someone does decide, like, I don't think this should be in the children's area, or I don't think this book should be in the library, or this DVD. We have reconsideration policies. We have a whole group of people that handle these, and we treat them with respect, and because it's important, again, that people feel that their voice is heard and that we listen, and we come up with ways to address their issue that still protect the core values of the library. And, of course, equity, diversity, and inclusion are part of our core values. I always say that, again, it's about making people feel welcome and reflected, that's very important. We always try to find a way to help, and we always try to provide the time that the person in front of us needs. Yeah, so then we'll have hopefully the training time for people to reflect and think about what they do and how this affects them. And is that
yeah, just some examples.
So then we have a lot of examples of various things. And these are the kinds of things, if you have the time to read through them, that would be great. And it also just helps you kind of understand what we deal with on a day-to-day basis. And, public libraries in the United States are unique spaces that allow communities to learn, bond, and grow together even when they disagree as individuals. The public library is a place of respect, and practicing professional ethics helps staff members develop respect for this important civic institution and for all people in our community. And I just hope that after people take this training that they will be very proud of the organization that they work for and how important it is to our community. And I hope I didn't go over too much time. I can talk about this forever. Thank you.
So this will be an online training that we'll roll out to our staff in a couple of weeks. So right now we're just working on translating it into Spanish. So because we do have we are planning to have all of our current employees take it and then future employees as well. So just trying to put that practice of equal access into action with this training.
Can I just add, just you can see the acknowledgments here. Nellie really took the lead on this, but worked with several other people in the organization. And honestly, this is about a year's worth of work, boiling down all of the different ideas and all of the different pieces that they all had. And to put it together into this format, I think will be very effective for our staff. And thank you, Nellie, for doing the work. And thank you, Emily, for helping translate it into the.
Yes. She did an amazing job making it look beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Mm-hmm. Any other? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a common question. Is there a mechanism to report a breach of for example, if I'm a staff member and I observe something that I think is problematic, is there a way to then address it?
Sure, they can address it with their supervisor. They can always report it to Pamela.
I get them.
And so a lot of that goes to Pamela to avoid any potential conflicts within their work group. So but, they encourage that. And if there's comments or concerns that staff members have, they can certainly report it up through the chain or directly to Pamela or to me.
So I guess that's it. I know that this isn't exactly the training, but I was thinking that in the training to include that if there's an breach, please contact us.
I mean, I know as a practice that what Jim said is absolutely correct, that everyone does know that you can speak to your supervisor if there's an issue. And this organization is super healthy that way. And so I can attest that when things have arisen, rather than like smacking somebody in the moment, that we've used that as a teaching moment. Where, I'm a seasoned person. I've been doing this 30 years, and I can just sort of step in and say, hey, let me help you with this, you know. And then we can have a private conversation later, and or sometimes we'll have a training in our staff meeting,
mm-hmm.
Just based on something that happened in our library where somebody wasn't quite sure what to do or maybe did make the wrong call or something like that. And so it gives us a way to learn without punishment. But, I mean, obviously, yes, there are HR policies for it, you know.
And I wasn't thinking, like, oh, this is a really big thing about punishment. It's usually about, like, a systemic type of observation.
Sure.
For example, if I'm working the whole session and I recognize, oh, like, I know this person, I know that person,
yeah.
I know that person, maybe we should rethink, you know,
yes.
that is coming out with a solution.
Yes.
That's not necessarily, like, oh, this person did something wrong,
right?
Rather than channel any of these observations or comments.
I think it does depend on what, you know, what the issue is. Like, at some point, you'll notice if you ever go in and pick up a whole, you don't display it so you can see the title. You only see, you know, we put the books out, or you can see the name, but you can't really see what they're reading, right? And that came through a suggestion. Somebody who noticed, saying, wait a minute, there could be a problem here. There's some other things that I think have been awesome suggestions from employees. Why do we need to know the gender of the employee when they apply for, not employee, of a customer,
mm-hmm.
when they apply for a library card? It really doesn't matter, right? And there are some people who it's problematic to have to choose. So we just took it out. There's just no reason to have it on there. There is a section where they do have to provide some information in case there are account lists and collections. But as far as, you know, what it says on your card or that sort of thing, but we really review that closely to make sure we're ensuring privacy and making equal access.
And we totally have a mechanism for what you were talking about, which is called what if we? Yeah. And it's right on our staff page where we can put in, you know, these are our suggestions. And that's a really, again, it's a very healthy organization that way.
Yeah, and the what if we form really is for anything. So process improvement, it's about interactions with patrons. It's, you know, it's a very broad, encompassing suggestion form. But there's also some requirements around it that you need not only suggest something, but what about what's the implications to the stakeholders? How does it impact your coworkers and so forth? So you really have to give us some thoughts as you're saying, oh, I think we ought to do this. So I think that's it.
And that reinforces our values as well, as it forces everyone to think through their suggestions so that it does meet all the values.
So you can back to
Alice. Yeah, exactly.
Another one is we have a process called incident reports.
Right.
So if something is happening in one library with a patron or a problem, then we fill out this information. And unless it comes to a trespass, we don't want to say the customer's name. But it helps all of us on the leadership team read all of those incident reports. And so if we identify a problem, we usually write on making sure that issue is being resolved.
I have quite a question and we'll do this later, but you know, with privacy and that's core value library principle. When we are interacting with third party groups, so Libby, EBSCOhost, other places where that type of data could be transmitted, how are we making sure that we are not like that they are in compliance with the things that we are asking for and
I'm going to defer to Jim and to Krista because I don't know the mechanism. I'm certain
you
that it's addressed.
Sure. Our agreements that our lawyer signs up on as well. we're very question a lot of how much data they're storing, what they need from us, and then as well make sure that it's they should be making queries of that. Yeah. So it's we're very information.
And I would say, in addition to that, the vendors that we deal with are primarily library vendors, and so the ethics of the entire profession really are kind of imbued in, in their delivery of the product as well. So they understand that we're not going to buy something if they're going to start marketing that. We had a big challenge with LinkedIn, and we fought with them about a number of issues that they wanted to collect certain information and do some marketing. And if there is ever a circumstance where we think that there could be some jeopardization of a person's privacy or their personal information, then we disclose that. But this could be, if you subscribe to this, then you recognize that this could be a potential. So we don't have any of those circumstances now, but the holds is a good example. And so in our, when you place a hold, there's a comment that says, this is going to be placed in a public area. If you're not comfortable with that, let us know and we'll find another way to deliver this material to you. But it's convenient, obviously, for us and for the patron to have the spying down and put your name out. But if you're not happy with that, then we'll find an alternative. We disclose it to them.
Thank you so much for your
great, really good job. And again, I think for all of our staff, some have received this in library school. Some it may have been 30 years ago. I think it's an excellent idea for us to continue to instill this into all of our staff and a constant reminder. The most important thing is that the patrons are really making their own decision. And so you're not making, a patron's not making a decision for another individual. They can make decisions about what they want to read and help guide them to those resources. If they're interested, they can give us some information about, I really like romance, I really like historical fiction, and I like this type of a protagonist. And we can kind of guide them to that, but we're not going to necessarily share that with someone else. Okay, that was the fun stuff. Now we get into the other fun stuff.
Okay, very good.
Same fast.
People don't think financials are fun. Now that is like the best part of our job here, for me and Russ at least. Yeah, that works. So we actually met with our department, and we've got Joey here with us, late last week to kind of talk about how we're doing this quarter. We really talked about the end of last year. So when we meet with them quarterly, we talk about our finances, right, how we're doing there. And I gave you guys all a report last month, really, on how 22 had gone. We also talk about what we call outcomes and indicators. So those are kind of like goals that each division in the county comes up with. And we have to track those as we're going through the year. They are things that we have to input as part of our budget to the county. And so quarterly, our department, you know, who oversees us, wants to know how are we doing with those. So as we met with them, we used a tool called CountyStat. And so we were thinking it might be a good idea for you guys to understand this CountyStat tool. So I'll talk about how it's used and maybe how we don't use it. Joey can disagree with me if she wants to, but
she might not.
There you go. So CountyStat was created, well, I can't remember how many years ago, several years ago at least, to provide more transparency. And really, for the most part, it's for council to be able to go in and take a look at our budgets and our outcomes and indicators at any time during the year and see how we're doing. It is a tool that's open to all employees in the county. So if you're interested in going in and seeing either what your division is doing or what another one is doing, you can do that. The department uses it, I'm guessing, at times to take a look at how we're doing as well. Okay, and so that's really what it was created for. And so that transparency is a good thing, but it really, for us, doesn't quite work as well as we would hope that it would. When we budget, so we have 40 different programs within the library. When we budget, the budgeting system would not allow us to budget at that level. Okay, so we have to actually roll up our budget into 6 sub-departments, and that's how we budget. So the system itself cannot actually track our expenses and budgets down to that level. It's only at that higher level. So really for us and any of our employees looking at it, they don't want to see that upper level of information. They really want to see down to the program level as we track things. So the system pulls information out of the county financials, okay, so it's pulling actual numbers,
But then, you know, we have pointed out that's not really our numbers. Like, we would really want to see our numbers down at the program level. So REST does expense reports every month, and that's what our managers get, and that's what we really use to track. And he provides that information monthly to the Office of Outcome and Indicators, that's what they're called. Okay. And they actually input that information into county staff. Okay. So there is a page that's a little bit closer to what our numbers are. Now, in part, we manage our budget and make adjustments to it throughout the year. For the county, you can adjust your budget twice a year, okay? Once when you first request it, and then in June, we have a time that's called June true-up. So we can make adjustments to our budget then as well, okay? But throughout the year, we're making adjustments, okay? We feel that, you know, really being more real-time is a better way of managing our budgets. It's a better way for our managers to actually go in and say, okay, what's really going on with my program? Where do I really need to be spending money? What am I really trying to accomplish? And so ours is much more dynamic than what this system really allows and what the county can accommodate. So I've had Russ pull it up here. So overall, this shows an overall summary of our budget. So even though the date here says 2/27/23, that's today, right? This is actually through the end of December. There are about 4 years worth of data that you can get to. This is basically showing our entire expense budget and what we have spent today. And then it breaks it out into the different, what we call appropriation units, the different sectors of the budget. Then below revenue, same thing. And you can see there's multiple sectors there of revenue. Budget versus actual. On the clock right there. Okay. Well, it's working on it, yeah. So it's going to show the budget as it was originally proposed, okay, in our budget. And then it's going to show finances as they were pulled from the financial system. Okay. Again, although you can drill down to some of the data, it doesn't go down to the levels that we actually care about, that we want to see. Okay. So our own internal reports work better for us. Now you can see here the tab self-reported. So that's where we have worked with them and said, okay, if we send you our reports monthly, can you upload those? Because that really is the data that really reflects what we're doing with our budget. So they do take those and they do upload them. And I'll tell you one of the issues with it, though, is that the Office of Outcome and Indicators, they have multiple platforms that they are keeping this data. So they have what is called SharePoint, and they put the data there. And then they have another version that you can get there, get to through a portal that's open to county employees. Okay, the data from those two don't ever seem to match. Okay, and when Russ has looked at it the last few times, I mean, it's not even matching our data. So again, this is just not a tool that we use. It's not something we would recommend that our employees go in and look at, because we're providing them more timely, accurate data than what this does. So I'm not sure, Joey, if you want to add any comments to that, but
I am happy to mostly agree with that. This tool is a little bit cumbersome in some ways, but isn't really anybody's fault, but has to do with the evolution of how we got to now. But when I was working in divisions, it was the same thing. This is set up to facilitate like a high-level conversation and to help build in some accountability to our stakeholders in at like a high level sort of view. But the truth is that the information at the time it's entered and the time it's reflected doesn't work for practitioners who are working closer to the direct services. And so when I was working in divisions, we always had an auxiliary set of data that we were working with. Ours was in Power BI most recently, and that's where we were looking often for that timelier information, which then can inform this. This is not useless. Well, I just mean, but depending on where you are in the organization, the timeliness of this, this has a different sort of purpose. It's a little bit more related to the higher level. So how about that?
Perfect. Okay.
You wouldn't want to audit to this bill, would you think?
Well, see, I bet we will at some point. It's, yeah, but in this, when you're talking about like a short-term decision, if you're looking in March for decisions that are going to affect April, May, June, this is not where you're going to want to come for that.
Mm-hmm.
As you're planning 2024, looking at 2022 and what you have of 2023, it has some utility.
Is there any process going on right now to like bridge that gap?
Great question. I'm going to say yes. I know. The data and innovation team are amazing, and they're working very hard to make this system work for folks. I don't know if there's something bigger in the works to like look at a different system. I don't know how married to like county status and system the county is. So
I would say that the information that we provide the board on a monthly basis is the accurate information, that and it wouldn't comport to what if you pulled up county stat, it wouldn't be the same. So yeah, we do provide the board with a monthly review of the expenditures and so forth. So that's the one for why.
And
absolutely.
Like as a county, we want these systems to work. It's a lot of like dedicated people who are figuring it out. So more to come, maybe something.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, this is not going to pull up.
Yes, we're having a hard time pulling it up. So I will say that there is also a tab in there for our capital projects. Now, the thing is, with our capital projects, you know, we don't look at it as just a grand total. Here's your budget. You have $1.5 million to spend. Okay, we break it down to a project level, but unfortunately, you cannot look at the data in here down to the project level. So in that respect, it really is not helpful at all for capital projects. Okay, so the one area that maybe is a little more useful, and it looks like you have it
up.
Before
you move on to that,
yes.
I think that for decision makers at the council and maybe even at the department, it has some utility for organizations that are in the general fund. The reason that it's a little bit different for general fund divisions as opposed to us, which is a special fund, is that there is some transferability of resources from one division to another. So if you're within the general fund, it's a bigger pool of money. So we have our own fund balance and our own dedicated tax revenue. So that money cannot be expended for any other purposes. And so it all resides within our own budget. So we spend and we budget to what we can take in. We can't ask the general fund to subsidize us. Whereas other divisions may make a request to have additional general fund resources appropriated into their budget, and they might find it in some other division. So it's for us, it's a little more cumbersome. We're not directly connected into some of these resources either because we have our own IT department. And so we're separated for a variety of reasons because of that. So it's just a little more cumbersome, I think, for the library to utilize this type of information for efficiency.
Absolutely. So I'm going to have Rush talk about the outcomes and indicators, because that is one area where the information is in there and is correct. Rush reports it monthly. And then Rush is going to talk a little bit more about 22's budget, not the numbers that are in county stat, but what our actual numbers are. Okay?
Okay. As it was said, each year we come up with four or more outcomes and indicators that we judge our performance on. And the first indicator here is having circulation and retrievals. So how many books are checked out, how often books are checked out online or in person or databases or accessed. So it's very important to have a good selection of materials to have a high circulation. And Krista and her group do a really good job in pulling usage reports and reviewing reviews to decide which databases and which books that we would purchase each year. So our goal for 22 was $2.1 million, and we were just under that. $12.1 million, and we were like at 12.09. So we were right there, 99% got our goal to what happened.
let me say one other thing about the circulation and the importance of that. We are one of a very select few library systems in the country that circulate more than 10 million items a year. So you look from Los Angeles to New York, from Seattle to Miami, only 20-some library systems that circulate 10 million items or more. And we're usually right in the number 12, 13 top circulating library in North America. So, I mean, it's pretty astounding that Little Salt Lake, with the population that we serve of less than a million people, would have that high of an appetite for materials. And so we're a high volume, high circulating, high workflow. And a lot of that is attributed to Krista and her group for selecting materials that people want. So good job.
So the next measurement is we're measuring how well we do on our in-person programming. So we have people come in, and sometimes online, where we teach mostly the younger kids, teach them skills and teach them how to learn, teach them how to read. And so we have a survey that we sent out. That we not only do we want to teach the students and the kids, but we want to teach the parents how to teach their kids. So we sent a survey out asking the question, did you learn something today in the program that will help you in the future to work with your kids and help them to progress? And so our goal was a 90% positive to that question, and we were at 88.89%, so we were at close to 90% of almost returnable. So, any questions on that? And some of these goals, most of the goals we discontinued in 23. The circulation goal was one that we were continuing into 23, and I'll go over those in just a minute. So the next one is a measurement of the number of times patron access county libraries, either in person or online. So if you notice that each of our libraries, we have those towers, gates, and it counts the number of people that come in. And so we want to make sure that we're a welcoming library, that people like to come in and we have the resources that they can access online. So again, this is refreshing. Okay. I'll give you the number as that refresh. Refreshes.
Oh, there it goes.
Okay.
So, we should have just done a screen capture. But
yeah.
We want to show you the real time.
So our goal on that was 7.2 million.
Okay.
To have people either come in or access us online. And the year-to-date through December was 7.092 million. So, again, 98.5% over in that area. And the last one is public use of computers and wireless services. COVID was a big change, obviously, for all of us. And a lot of the students in the area didn't have access to online learning. So we had hotspots, Chromebooks that they could take home and use to remote into their schools and continue their education. So our goal for that was 250,000 sessions, and we achieved 461,000, so far exceeding what we anticipated the usage of our hotspots and Chromebooks and even inside the library where they would have access to the computers. A lot of people rely upon the library to come and do resumes and look up for jobs and things like that. And in some of the areas, the population aren't as, don't have those things. And they rely upon the library.
That's really amazing. I just want to jump in and say, like, that's really incredible gap to bridge, right? That was obviously such an essential service. So great job.
Yeah.
You do lots of great things. That one also.
Okay. Too much clutter on here. Okay, now I'm going to go to the outcomes and indicators for 2023. These are our current ones. So again, we have the circulation and retrievals. And so our goal for 2023 is 12.5 million. So, Krista, the pressure's on.
Top 10 or...
The next one there is the door count. So we want to make our library a welcoming place where people come in not only to check out books, but they come in and participate in programming and create space activities and just a place to connect and feel comfortable and maybe get out of, you know, get away and just feel comfortable. So our door count, whoops, went too far, didn't I?
So this is similar to the 22 goal. However, we removed the online access. And the reason that we are doing this, and I'll just jump in here for a second. And that is during COVID, it was important for us to connect virtually. So we had a lot of online classes. We had yoga classes and story times and all kinds of author visits and things online. So we were capturing that data because we wanted to know how we were connecting for our population. So, and that's important, and we still are measuring some of that, but as far as reporting out, we think that we need to segregate the in-person visits, so the people that are coming through our doors versus the people that are connecting to us online. The reason we want to connect with the people in person is that we built some new buildings, we're building new buildings, or we're at least, you know, exploring the idea of replacing buildings. So I think to justify and to document that people, the internet's great, but people still come to a physical space to interact, to collaborate, to, you know, participate in programs or resources. And so we wanted to make sure that we could report out to the funders and the council and others that you may have heard and people may say, oh, I get everything online. But the fact is, every hour that we're open, about 800 people come through the doors. So, I mean, it's a huge number of people that are still interacting with us in a physical space. And we want to make sure that our buildings are clean, that they're appropriately staffed, that we can term, and the gate counters are kind of unique in that they can also determine days of week. So they capture a lot of information. We can then staff our facilities and know if we need to staff more in the morning, is Tuesdays busier than Thursdays. And so you can make some adjustments in how you are staffing your facility as well. So it counts an important measure in that.
So our target for 23 is 2.5 million in the gate count. Our last upcoming indicator. Yeah.
Right now, the report we get from you all has the gate count includes personnel. Is that included in the
I'm sorry.
For the report, I remember looking last time at our meeting, I looked at the report, and I said, why was anyone there on that day? And they...
They may be counting some staff. Mm-hmm. Usually we have staff entrance that is not counted in the gate count. But if they go out to get the book drop, and Sandy's a good example, and so they go out through the main gates, and they'll collect the books from the book drop, and then bring them in on a holiday or on the weekend, so, or on Sunday.
Then
that would count it. But it's very nominal. And if you look at 2.5 million, that may be people a month or less. I mean, it's not very many. So.
Yeah. And so our last one is our program attendance.
No.
Where our target is 390,000 people attending the programs that we have. That would include stuff we do at the Meridian, like
Harry Potter,
yes, and also the story time and various other things that we do.
What's the
count
last year for that?
Do we have that?
Are we going up or down or same thing?
I don't. Sorry. We can get that to you. Back to the gate count, I would say that the one place that we do not
need to open
the gate count is at the we do count circulation there, but
so I'm told I have 5 minutes left, so I need to hurry. So this is a 22 revenue, our budget versus our actual. Okay, and here's the over and short. Now, one comment here is we're still expecting a check for $61,000 to cover a hotspot grant that we had. And then here, library fines and fees, we were short 21. These are donations, so we budgeted 9,000, we got 98. This is Viridian. So we did better in Viridian. We're seeing a bounce back from COVID. So we budgeted 100,000, came in 120. Used books, flash drives, bags, stuff that we sell, 15 over. And then the grants, 5,000 over than what we budgeted.
Pressure's on.
Great.
3 minutes.
So, okay, so I'm going to sit down and talk to this one. This is our expenses for the year versus our budget. And I'm going to kind of get the right size here so that you can see it. It's hard when you just have a pad and don't have the mouse. So remember, there's different sectors. There's a personnel sector, an operating sector, a capital sector of the budget. So this is the personnel. So we budgeted $34.7 million. We spent $31.7 million. We have this remaining budget, so we spent 91% of the budget.
Is that because of shortages for
something? Exactly. Okay. That's because we're having a hard time hiring people. The employment's really low here in Salt Lake area. And to boot, we don't really pay. We sometimes have a hard time competing with the salary. So, Pamela may talk more about that when she comes up. Then if we go down to the operating sector, we budgeted $13.4 million. We spent $13.07 million. This will probably increase because the year's not closed yet. I anticipate about another $100,000 in expenses. So that means we'll be less than $300,000 under expend, about 98% for our budget. So you may ask, why is there any under expend? And that's because a lot of this comes out of collections, and we may make an order for a number of books, but they can't fill them until this year. And so that would attribute to some of that that overreach. It's a seasonal thing. Books are a seasonal thing, and Chris could probably talk more about that, but it's hard time at the end of the year to purchase, and we get some money left over. So, and then if we go down to capital, Jim likes this one on the overhead. We always spend all our money on overhead, $2.5 million.
So just to be clear, the overhead is not our administrative overhead. This is the county's overhead. So yeah. We pay for the auditor, we pay for Megan, attorney fees, we need to pay for treasurer, the mayor's office, Geraldine's office, mayor's finance. And so it's a formula that they roll out based on personnel.
So, cost of goods sold, we buy book bags, flash drives, things like that. Spent 24 cents of our budget, and I guess just one other comment. In our capital, we were 5,600 under spent, and so we bought some gates and we bought a dump truck that we were able to get a better price on than what we did. So that's the variance. So I sit down with all of the department managers at least three times a year and go over their budget. And in September, I go over the budget and say, okay, how much are you going to underexpend? So we can reallocate that money to other areas. So when we do a budget, we approve a budget, we have a list of items that are approved, and then we have a list of if we had money, we buy it or do it. And so when I sit down and go over their budgets, they tell me how much money they're not going to spend, and then we can reallocate that to those other items that we prioritized. And said if we had money, we would do this or buy this. And a lot of time, that is small equipment or furniture or things like that they were in need of. Okay, next we'll go to capital. You want to do
it? We'll do that during our finance.
So we
do that. Let's just do that.
You good now? Okay.
Let's have that in the kitchen right now.
Yeah.
Since you're ready.
I am ready.
So we'll talk about our 22 capital projects, and you guys probably heard me just about every month last year talking about kind of the issues we run into with our capital projects, in that we have buildings that are failing, right? They need to be replaced. They need some major work done on them. And so we will budget money to do repairs, okay, capital maintenance repairs. But if we have a building that we know needs to be replaced and could potentially be replaced within, say, the next 5 years, do I really want to dump money into that building? Okay, I have a really, really hard time saying, sure, let's replace the roof on this building, knowing that we may tear down this building in 4 years, right? And that, in a way, was a waste of that money. So when we look at the budget for 22, I need that larger. Some of the projects that we did some xeriscaping at Bingham Creek. That is one of our branches with the largest amount of grass space, okay? Our largest water bills were coming out of Bingham Creek. So we went in and did a xeriscaping project to hope to eliminate some of that grass by putting in water-wise plants throughout. Okay, we've got security cameras, and so those need upgraded, right, every so often. So Hunter and Magna were the two buildings that we did this last year. I'll come back to Sandy. Taylorsville roof, we did that. The roof membrane was replaced on Taylorsville. Whitmore also needs a roof, and if you recall, Whitmore is one of those buildings that needs to be replaced. Okay. But the roof is so bad that, you know, we really look at it. Can we hold out for 4 or 5 more years? And the answer was no. Okay. Besides the library in Whitmore, we have our technical services where all of our new materials are processed. So you start having flooding in that building, right, leaks in the roof, we're talking some pretty costly damages. So we made the decision, yes, we would replace, or at least work on the roof there, replace the roof membrane. And so that will be happening as soon as the weather gets a little bit better this year. We rolled that over. We scroll down. That's West Valley.
And 2 more minutes.
And my 5 from my other 5. Okay, and security cameras for Harriman, which we rolled forward. Now, you'll see that I passed by some of those projects. So there was the Sandy fire suppression system. Sandy needs a major remodel. If we redo the fire suppression system, okay, a lot of that would probably get torn out when we do the remodel. So we made the decision that one is going to have to wait until we do the remodel. That just seems to be a better decision there. We also have the Whitmore VFD, okay, variable frequency drive. Again, we decided that one could wait until we are ready to redo that building. Okay, so didn't do that project. Western Fireplace, we were able to take care of that one, and it was less than $10,000, so it actually doesn't become a capital maintenance project. We just did it out of our operating budget. So West Valley, right, our other problem building that needs replacement. And so carpet, all we were going to do carpet-wise was really look at tripping hazards, okay, but we decided we're not even going to do that. The boiler, if you recall, we've had multiple problems with the boiler there. As we looked at even trying to replace that, it was like, nope, you need to totally redo the boiler, because the one that we had was so old that even the ductwork would have to be redone in order to accommodate a new boiler. So we've made the decision, nothing on West Valley. Okay? We know that that is like our number one priority for a new building. Okay, and we've made the decision that when major systems fail in West Valley, we will be closing down West Valley until we are able to build a new one. Okay, so nothing there.
So we'll still have one facility in West Valley.
Yes, Hunter.
Libraries in West Valley as well. So. And Taylorsville's not terribly far away. Just seems to make sense. If the building fails, why invest $1 million in a building that we're going to tear down? That deserves to be torn down. Sorry.
Take that in a good way. That's really good. So as we look at some of the projects that we budgeted for 23, we have some parking lot overlays in Hunter and Taylorsville. Bingham Creek, we're having issues with the parking lot there. So, you know, last year we looked at the xeriscaping. okay? But the way that our book drop is set up, we have people who like speed through that. So it's like for kids, it can be a dangerous place for actually anyone who's in the way of the cars, right? Zipping through there. So we want to really have a new design of that whole parking lot made to really look at where's a good spot to put the book drops. What can we do to keep people from just speeding through there? So that's fun.
There's an elementary school right next to it mm-hmm. that people park in that area to pick up their kids to the whole things.
Yep. Security camera need to be redone. Two of the buildings are Tyler and Whitmore. Now, those are two of our buildings that we know need to be replaced. But security cameras could be taken out and used again in the new buildings. So we were good with that. So here for holiday, the sewer line needs to be dealt with. So we had some, Trudy's like, oh, yay. We have a we have the sewer backing up a lot here. The sewer is old. It, see if I can describe it. Like the inside of it rusts out. Things get caught in it. When people are flushing stuff down the toilet that probably shouldn't be flushed and, you know, gets caught in there. And so we end up with sewage backups. So like when Trudy was talking about the day that we reopened and had our grand opening with the mayor at 2 a.m, I get a call from the facilities guys. The sewer system is backing up and the whole building is full of sewage. They're like, can you call off the grand opening? I'm like, not at 2 a.m. so they're able to contain it to the basement.
Wow.
And it didn't smell too bad up here. And then we came in later in the week and really cleaned it up.
Awesome air freshener.
No, up here it actually was okay. But, yeah, that was
like. That's like a lot more building to put. Let's put them on oh, they're so great. Why didn't you replace this building?
Yep. So, but most definitely the pipes here need to be, they need to have a liner. So we're going to try and go in and put in a liner on the inside of the pipes that runs out to the main water line. Let's see. Cooling towers at West Jordan and a new boiler at West Jordan. Again, another building that has heating and cooling issues. Cooling tower at Tyler. Now, yes, Tyler is one of those buildings we want to replace, and no, we can't take a cooling tower with us, but just about every summer we end up closing Tyler multiple days because we cannot keep it cool, okay? And so we felt, yes, we need to deal with this. Now, if it turns out that we get really going with the replacement of Tyler, who knows? We may decide not to do that one, but for right now, that's on the schedule for this year. New carpet at Viridian and at Magna. Okay, where the carpet is getting so old, like at Viridian, that you basically, there's like different levels of carpeting, which becomes a tripping hazard because parts of it are so worn out. We are doing a lighting conversion to LED lighting at Harriman. Now, we have just recently found that the county has some federal grants that they have gotten to move the lighting over to LED. So they've talked with us, and we're like, we would love to take your grant funds and do it rather than our own capital funds, right? So we will be working with them on that one. So that means those funds can either be moved to a different project or they may just stay in our fund balance for future projects. Okay, those are projects for this next year. Any questions about the capital maintenance projects? Okay. You've heard me talk about new buildings. So where we're at with the new buildings, right? We had the tax increases last year, and the idea is we do have four big projects we want to work on. Okay. Our next step really is refining our cost estimates and then taking them to council to get approval from council to do those projects. So, yeah, let's just look. Okay.
Is there a time frame for that?
Months.
More than weeks, yes. Like maybe a couple of months. We are hoping the first step is called Debt Review Committee. It's the financial people in the county. And we're hoping for May-ish, April, May-ish for that, and then to council in like May, June time frame.
I'd like to bring that to the board first for your review to make sure that we're all kind of aligned and what the process will be. We're still looking at different property acquisitions or potential acquisitions of properties.
Highland, West Valley, both.
Well, we have not. So we believed that we had a West Valley location identified. It turns out that was now off the table. And so we're looking at how we can cobble together some property. We'll be coming forward in the next month and a half as well with some ideas around that.
Do you have ideas for Midline?
I'm sorry?
Do you have ideas for Midline?
We do. We're not ready to no looking on that yet.
Those are the two libraries that I'm really paying attention
yes.
to because they're tech focused.
They are definitely have issues.
All right.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
We've got the customer behaviors. I don't know for the ones afterwards, do we have
We can do that. The reason that we wanted to bring this to your attention is that we have had a number of trespass issues lately. When we say trespass, that's basically barring someone or suspending an individual's privilege to come into the library for some period of time. And there's a variety of reasons that we do that. Typically, we will provide some counseling and some warnings and some other kind of, there's a whole procedure on what the expectations are around that. There are other instances where there's either an assault or a threat or some type of immediate action that needs to be taken that there is no warning. It's like we have a zero tolerance for an assault on one of our staff, verbal or physical. Threats and intimidation, zero tolerance. We do. So if someone is threatening to blow up the library, you know, and they tell us they're going to come and get us, or there's some other reason that we think it, we need to prohibit this person from entering the building and all of our buildings, then we'll take a certain action. Now, some of those can be appealed. All of those can be appealed, just like material selection and our displays and any other services that we provide. If we prohibit someone from being trespass someone from the building, they can appeal that to me, and then it goes to the board if they don't agree with my decision and they want to take that further. So the board may hear that. And we believe that that was going to happen today. We had trespassed an individual for threatening staff and for behaviors that didn't merit a progressive discipline, if you want to think of it that way. It was like an immediate, that's unacceptable. You cannot come back in the building for 6 months. And he complained to me for a couple hours and to some other staff members for hours. Clearly, he had some mental health issues and some other behavioral control problems. He indicated he might show up today or might not. I don't know. So he didn't. So.
I really appreciated the information you provided, Jeff. Thinking employees will be
We want to use. We just set through our ethics and why we think it's important to protect our staff and the value. You know, we're public servants, but we're not, it's not appropriate for the public to abuse us. So we do have our limits. We're very accommodating and friendly and can often turn the other cheek, but when it gets to a certain behavioral point, we're not going to talk. And it's just not appropriate for people to be abusive and to threaten you or to follow you, to accost you outside of work or even in the workplace. That's just not. So, and Jen is going to provide you with the.
Yeah, I have the presentation about sort of their philosophy around trespassing and the different roles that different people, including yourself, play in that. But I can bring that up.
Now I think we have the staff reports.
Yep. So statistical report, you are provided monthly a snapshot of a variety of different metrics that we capture. Those of you that have been on the board for a while know that we capture a lot of information. We have an entire spreadsheet of key indicators, and it has we really do capture so much data that we can analyze and bear it through, and that's why we have such high circulation. We understand the turnover rate of books. We understand, you know, how people are using our system, what the access is like for so many things. Books are rooms that are reserved and how we manage those better. So That stuff is presented to you in a kind of a snapshot with some historical data on the back. So I invite your attention to those items, and if there's anything you have a question about, please let me know. Again, it's always astounding to me, the first little icon over here is the number of new library registrations that we've provided in the, just in the last month. So 4,383 people have signed up for library card in the last month. And that's a pretty consistent number. And the reason that that stays high and it also really doesn't fluctuate when you look at the overall number of library card holders is that we purge our system. And so many library systems don't delete patrons. So you're a library card holder in Seattle and you moved away and 10 years later, you're still counted. So for us, if you don't touch our system within a couple of years, then we delete you, and unless you have a fine or there's some other issues there. But we delete you from the system, and then you have to come back and re-engage with us, sign up for a library card, get current address, those types of things. So, but, yeah, every month, 4,000 people.
I have a question. Is there any initiatives within the schools to get students?
Yeah, we have a liaison, school liaison. Matt oversees that, and we connect with schools, and we encourage it. In fact, we connect with hospitals.
Yeah, so, we have programs where we work with the hospital, Susan, who's out, and they answer deliver books, too. We have a little option for a library, a baby's first library card. And then at school, we work with the different districts to have, like the PTA night, they'll have at the library, we'll go to the PTA night and send people up for the cards there. We are also always trying to work with the school librarians, and so Tina, who's our school liaison, we'll be working with the librarians and the district supervisors so that they always have the most current information from the library and access to resources. We also have the Level Up program, which is to get every third grader that we can to the library and get a library card. So we're working with the districts on that. And they're trying to expand that to, I believe, ninth grade as well. So students who missed out on ninth grade as well.
And that's
such
a great age
to catch. Yeah. Right, and that's the thing, especially if you've gone to a junior high that doesn't have an elementary school that doesn't have a certified library teacher to actually share some of those resources. They may not know where they can start. So.
I have a question, and might maybe be past the topic, but is this graph, is that projected?
Yeah, I'm hoping it's not going to be that bad of a story.
I'm not sure if there was a double.
We're seeing the same mental health issues that we're seeing through the whole country.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think as people re-entered society from having been oyster for so long during COVID, they kind of forgot what civility is. And, we've had a lot more behavioral issues, and particularly people that are experiencing mental health challenges are finding more outbursts. They're not, don't want to make a judgment around that, but they just seem more willing to blurt things out and to be inappropriate in spaces. And we've had people that expose themselves, people that have accosted people, fights in the buildings, and so just seems like there's a higher level of tension in society at the moment. And we're a public space, and, particularly when you have a predominantly female staff, that they feel empowered. Like the one individual that was so abusive to Sarah and her staff, that individual had this, he was asserting himself in a very alpha way.
Well, Holly, I just want to clarify, too, that projection was based on January and February numbers, which we had a crazy couple of weeks, especially at the West Valley Library. I think we trespassed 8 patrons within a 2-week-ish period, and that was because the city library had to close for sewer reasons, and so all of the people who
Normally we go to the city main. We're getting on the paths and going to wherever the tracks is, which of course our valley is.
And the city main probably has their spot that they make.
And so
we, unless Sally's telling me. Yeah, where is it? Well, also, they do have some social workers at the meeting.
Yeah.
So they're definitely able to handle the situation.
So hopefully, like I said, hopefully that is not going to carry out during this year.
Well, it's going to
really
hurt. And to amplify what Jen said about that, it really, when you come from the downtown main library, where it's huge space, and you had a lot of, this is my area, in a corner or whatever it is, and you come to West Valley, it's tight. There's only 1,200 square feet there. You know, you get 15 or 20 people that have these spatial issues. You're always going to be encroaching on their space and their territory, and it creates the higher anxiety that they act in.
Well, and West Valley doesn't have the outdoor space.
It doesn't have outdoor space. It doesn't have
bathroom
wraparound services. West Valley has not been a very good partner in helping us solve some of these issues. Just like the person that exposed himself and then ended up going beyond that, they were not very responsive in our requests for them to come and assist us. What's next? Oh, appointments. I'm not happy. I'm the bus,
come on. To jump in, Holly, Russ mentioned the 390 program attendees. That is our. Looks like we had about 300 in 2020. Yeah. It was, early 22, we still had a lot of programs that were virtual. So hopefully.
Before I should talk, your Twitter game has been like.
we'll take a quick digression. And Twitter has been really weird the past month.
Oh, yeah. But your game has been off.
It's been really good the past month or so. Jen has been experimenting with a lot of different graphics information just to try to see what is going to get engaged on these things. Back in October, November, I think we ended up losing probably, 6 or 7% of the Twitter audience has been people were going with a lot of bots, traffic, et cetera. So it is now on the upcurs again. We're getting a lot better. So it's nice to see.
I want to talk about TikTok just really quickly. As people may have moved from Twitter to TikTok or have other social media platforms.
TikTok is, of course, the huge one, especially people my age like to go to TikTok and download things and then share it on Instagram. We had a TikTok at the library back in 2019, and we just had a lot of staff at that time, and we were able to do a lot of fun things. But because of staffing changes and pandemic, we focused on just different platforms. And so we were hoping to get it back up this year, but then the council decided that nobody in the county is going to be using TikTok, so we're going to have to probably do that soon. But we'll just keep doing all the fun stuff on Instagram. I was looking at marketing and promotion the past month and a half. We've had some great events with a lot of media attention. The Teen Winter Ball had some nice press come out. We had the Valentine's Dance for Adults, which had almost 500 people there. And so we had a lot of press for that. And then, of course, the All-Star Winter Reading Program promotion for that, and then the mascot event that we had during Star Week had ABC 4 Live segment that happened at the event. And looking ahead, some of our promotions going into March are the Teen Formal Wear Swap, and that is a program where people can come in and donate used formal wear to the branches, and then teens can come in and pick out a free new to them outfit for prom season, which is great. That's expensive. And then we also have the awesome 80s prom for adults that is going to be coming up as well. So that's just some programming for adults. In terms of resources, we are promoting Hero Code, which is the coding program that we have acquired this year. We're also doing a lot of digital music. This past year, we brought on Fuglongen. So we've been promoting movies and t-shirts of that, but this month we're starting to promote the music aspect of it. And I'm excited because this is one of the campaigns that we're going to have in both English and Spanish because there's so much Latin music available for people. put out was that way. So we're going to have that in our emails. They're going to be both languages and some of the materials are going to be able to. Well.
Has the QR code been promoted to that? Try to pay attention to that. I feel like that's something I should say to the staff.
Well, yes, they came up. I know they provided flyers and branches. Okay, we did some email for it as well. It's one of those that we just get in the social rotation that we promote.
I think schools can go have that.
So we'll have that as a feature. I think that that should go out within the next week, just whenever that does hit all of the self-paced groups. So all the kids who have those email communications and families can choose.
Okay.
Okay, I think that's all we've got today. Right. If there are any questions.
Yeah, we've heard enough from Leslie. So.
Fine, short and sweet today. This is on your report if you want to refer back to it, but we have 281 full-time, 40-hour staff, 76 30-hour staff, 112 20-hour staff, 83 substitutes, and we have 58 vacancies. But I wanted to run through what those vacancies were. We are 10 of the vacancies we're currently interviewing for. 8 of the vacancies, there are new hires, but they'll be starting within the next week or so. 12 positions we have allocated for current reclasses, so they're in the reclass process. 14 positions, we're reviewing whether we need to fill them for the current position or if we need to reclass them. We are tracking just like across the nation where we're using fewer and fewer of the unskilled jobs and we need the more paraprofessionals and professionals. So like Ellen's for Create Space and that sort of thing. So we review those vacancies before we hire them. And then we have 14 unused allocations that we are saving for anticipated requests.
So every time there's a vacancy in our system, we do critically analyze whether that position is still relevant. Is that the right one for us to fill? Should we combine it with other allocations, particularly if you have a shelver position that's 20 hours and then you have a customer service specialist that may be 20 hours. Do you want to combine those and do a 40-hour CSS or into 40-hour library assistant? Or how do you best use those allocations and where is the workload the greatest so that you can accommodate the needs of the public? So, and we really are finding the lower shoulders and the CSS not as critical for us at this time, and our LAs and people that are dealing with the public are more critical. So this is we have more interactions, and even though our gate count may have been fairly flat, or we think it'll be fairly flat from the projections that we had last year, we know that people are staying in our spaces longer. So they come into the space, and where before it was very transactional, and you were here for 20 minutes, and then you left. You came in and got your hold and left in 5 minutes. Now people are coming and they're staying for a longer period of time, so they're requiring greater support and help and resume building and job searches and setting up email or setting up, just all the coding and homework help. So we're finding that there's a higher skill level that's needed for that.
I think that's an also really interesting problem, right? Especially because you're looking for a particular set of skills that you can develop. At the same time, I do wonder about the accessibility of unskilled jobs for people who then that's their entryway to organizations. And so I think I was just going to comment on. Like, as all, I'm sure you're already doing this, but also assessing for the requirements to application and to not necessarily, continue, add more and more and more, because you think a lot of people can be turned into the role that you need, and, that's
And I would However, I would also say that we grow a lot of our employees. And so we do have lower skilled or lower requirements for the entry in either shuttlers or sometimes CSS. And we grow them and support them to become library assistants or to become, you know, other types of individuals, outreach librarians. We have a tuition reimbursement program, so if an individual is interested in obtaining their MLS, then we can help support that financially and reimbursement. So we really do try to grow, and that's why we reclass a lot of positions as well, is that we reclass. We see the talent of an individual, and we want to reclass that position to something that we think they're skilled to do.
Yeah, that's what we have some really beautiful examples, like one of our best librarians that has a big reach in the Hispanic community started with us as a custodian. And then we discovered she had a bachelor's degree in accounting and wanted to get in MLS school, so we helped her get her resume translated so she could actually get in. And I worked with her college, and they paid the difference from what we did in tuition reimbursement that got her a scholarship. She's been so successful, her husband just completed an MLS program. So we do hire entry-level and help people grow. Another position, we had an IT position that has been vacant for, man, was that over a year? And we took one of our CSS, customer service specialists, put her through a career mobility assignment, and as soon as she met the minimum policy, we were able to hire. IT positions are ones that we have vacant for a long time because our pay is just not equitable with the silicon slums. And
we have a facilities person that's doing the same thing.
Right, a facilities person. So we do as much as we can to grow people, especially in these hard to build positions. So.
Yeah. I started off as a clerk.
Built up loyalty and then longevity and retention.
For shelter positions, where there are some people who are able to have a job and that may be the best job they can ever. Some of our very best shelters are on the spectrum. They have no interest in being in customer service, but they can outsell anybody. So, so we really, I do try to extend that pretty inclusion in our private practices and promote. Mr. Asmus, I gave this opportunity to shout about it.
Just, you know, I've been here for a number of years, and I have noticed that about the library. I think I just wanted to bring it up again to make sure that we can continue, because the group that the library has done at growing its people has been amazing, and so I want to ensure that that continues to be a process as we, you know, hiring practices and labor shortages.
We just did Shelburne interviews.
Doing them today.
Oh, today.
Yep.
The
other thing is many of our substitute employees, which are very important to us, will start as a substitute shelver, work their way up, and then also get hired as merit. It's so foot in the door. If you can see how well they, what good workers they are, we can happily take them.
Just, you know, wondering what the rest of the board is, if that might be something that agenda items to talk about, like what the requirements are and what that is.
I'd love to.
A little bit broader. I think that's the last part of our any other business. Anything else? Any questions? Joe, you had a comment? No?
So
I
guess they're also looking at some of those entryway levels at county level. I think understanding that requirements like a college education or equivalent is something you need to evaluate a little bit more carefully, because it's really just sort of landed on college education, which is great, but not the only pathway to success. So I think the conversations that are happening here are also happening throughout the county. There you go. We are reassessing something, those skills. Supervision are labeling to train. For instance, if we're asking for this skill level, but industry-wide paying for lab skills, then and county comp has been working with us on it.
Yeah. And I would say that Emily is our training coordinator, and you saw the presentation she did around professional ethics. And we have a lot of other trainings around customer service and other domains within the library that people can take, and sometimes you're required, sometimes you're voluntary, and builds that self-confidence and ability to, if not with us, maybe go to someplace else and have those same interviewing skills and knowledge. So
it's a great question.
Now, I would invite,
if we can slide right afterwards, there's a tour for anybody who'd be interested in participating, but in the meantime, we're going to adjourn.
Thank you.
There we go.
Yeah.
And thanks again to our prospective new board members. Hopefully confirmed on the 7th.
I got an email to myself.
Time is starting off.
Does Grace already have the grant vote?
She, it was already.
Missed the show because it would come from the show.
Yeah. Melissa, did she say?
It probably is.
Expected on the 7th.
I don't know the time of I think I'm
something. Well, we'll let you guys know when we're back. As soon as we're here.
Thank you.
We'll do something.